Scarpins Audio.
Hey guys, welcome to another episode of View from the Cheap Seats, the show where Randy and I break down the world of sports and talk about what's funny about it, what's interesting about it. We have a great show today. We have a best-selling New York Times best-selling author, John U. Bacon, who has a tremendous new book called Let Them Lead, Unexpected Lessons in Leadership from America's Worst High School Hockey Team that he took over as the coach, being one of the worst players in that high school's hockey history.
The River Rats.
The combination of the worst high school hockey team in history and him being one of the worst players in that history actually was genius, and it turned the entire thing around. It's really a book about leadership, and it's a really cool book. So we'll get into that with him. Talk about college football and college sports and the idea. He wrote a great book about Bo Schembechler. Could Bo Schembechler be a coach today?
I doubt it, especially with what happened. And then also, we get into the topsy-turvy world that already is this season.
Right.
The excitement of fans being back and whether that's a good or bad idea.
And for our Patreon fans, we talk about the leaked list of names for the Washington football team and who we think.
We come up with our own names for the way. If you want to find out what we think,
join our Patreon. Let's talk about our top take of the day.
So Donald Trump and his son.
Man. Which dumb son was this?
I doubt it's Barron.
It's not Barron.
He's 6'11".
Three Barron Trump.
That dude can dunk.
He did. Yeah, he can.
He can dunk a grapefruit or a tennis ball. Mm-hmm. They are set to commentate boxing matches this Saturday night.
Okay.
All four fights they're going to commentate on a special feed.
Oh, great. That's the thing that we never asked for that's happening.
Including a fight with Evander Holyfield. Now, I heard Evander Holyfield ran, and I was like, isn't that dude like 60 years old?
How old is he?
58.
There we go.
So I was right. He shouldn't be fighting.
No.
That's a guy who should not be fighting.
Like, remember when George Foreman was 44 and fought that fight?
48.
He was 48, like, and we were like, what's he doing?
So old.
What's he doing?
58. Who's he fighting? Leon Spinks?
Maybe.
You better be fighting an old guy.
Better be fighting a guy in a walker.
This is just a money grab. And speaking of money grabs, I think on some level it is going to be interesting. I mean, Trump has no experience calling the fight.
Can't talk, can't drink a glass of water.
He says he kind of likes fights, but he doesn't really know what he's doing, and he's going to wing it and see how it goes. Does that sound familiar?
Yeah, like his whole presidency.
Right? Let's hope he doesn't kill 500,000 people while he does this broadcast.
He certainly doesn't give a shit.
But in all honesty, I heard this was happening, Rand, and I apologize if this level of politics bothers you. But I think this is I'm going to try and take politics out of the situation.
Take politics out of it.
And just say this guy. This is not a Republican or a Democrat issue. This guy, this is what this guy should have been doing
all along.
He should not have been president of the United States. He should be calling sideshow fights with 58-year-old washed-up fighters with his son.
Yeah.
That's who he is.
By the way, that would make a lot of money.
It would make a lot of money.
A lot of money, no headaches.
He could be in power. He wouldn't have half the population hating him. People, that guy's crazy. He doesn't know what he's talking about, but who cares? It's entertaining.
I'll listen to that.
That's the extent of what that guy's influence should have been. Mm-hmm. And I'm saying they're getting it right.
Yeah.
And whether you love the guy or you hate the guy, and I hate the guy.
This is what he should be doing.
I'm saying this is what he should have been doing all along for the last 4 years.
Right?
That's it. Instead of dividing our country, instead
four
of
more years of
this
calling dumb boxing, he should call every Logan Paul fight.
Yeah.
And every Jake Paul fight.
People should be tuning in to hear how little he knows about the sport and to be laughing at him and being like, this is a garbage thing, but it's a train wreck, but I can't turn away.
That's right.
When you're talking about an alternate broadcast of a sideshow fight, it's okay to be like, this is a train wreck, but I can't turn away.
And a Evander Holyfield fight in 2021 is a train wreck you don't want to turn away from.
And Trump calling it is a train wreck you don't want to turn away from. You want to use those terms to describe sideshow fights, not the
our
country
economy
or the world.
That's right.
Or public health or the climate or whatever.
That's right.
So that to me is where boxing finally got something right
for the first time in a long time.
So more of this, let him do this until he dies. And then in my opinion, then he's being best served. He's best served to his people.
Mm-hmm.
He's best served to his talents.
Yep.
And he's playing to his strengths.
Uh-huh.
Let him do this. That's what I'm saying.
There you go.
All right. When we come back, we're going to talk to
John U. Bacon. I love it. And then later on the show, a fantastic conversation with Steven Seagal. You don't want to miss it. This is View from the Cheap Seats. Don't go anywhere.
Hey Hey guys, welcome back to the show. We try to get this guy on every year. Why? Because he writes a great book every year.
Yeah,
basically.
Every year.
And also he knows his college football, and we have just started the college football season, and he's one of our favorite people in the world. He is a New York Times bestselling author.
Has a new book called Let Them Lead: Unexpected Lessons in Leadership from America's Worst High School Hockey Team. We've got the book right here, and I've been reading it, and I love it so much.
He is John U. Bacon.
We'll talk about it later, Bakes. Let's talk about it in segment two, all right? Let's not get to all the wonderful things that you've done, although I will say this one story was really, really great, and it made me so happy. It reminded me of another story. But Jay and I were in the Michigan, in Schembechler Hall with you the last time we visited Michigan, and we're standing there, and two guys walk in, and a lot of times on when we're out in the world,
people come up to us
and they'll want to take a picture with us. Some guy handed me his phone and said, "Will you take a picture of me and John Bacon?" And I was like, "That's
yes!
Of course." It reminded us of the time we were 25 years old and had our birthday party in Manhattan, and we were at a bar on the Lower East Side. And Janine Garofalo, who we knew from the comedy world, this is 97. So
she's big.
Like peak.
She was peak Janine.
Peak Garofalo. Like Jimmy Garofalo at his best was Garofalo. And Eddie, she had met Eddie Vedder. This was like the weirdest thing. And he like took her to a Knicks game or something like that. And she invited him down.
She was
to
like,
the,
"Can I invite a friend to your party?"
We're like,
"Sure." It's at a bar. You can have 20 people.
And Eddie Vedder came down. So Eddie Vedder's on the sidewalk. And like two girls who were dressed exactly like Janine Garofalo from Reality Bites, like with lunch boxes and the Betty Page haircut, they walk up and they see Janine on the street and they lose their veritable minds. And
they don't even have phone. There's not. No one has a camera on a phone.
They have a disposable camera, and they just shove it in Eddie Vedder's face. And we're like, "Will you take a picture with us?" And Eddie Vedder just stood there. He was so happy to not be recognized and take the picture. And that's the way we felt with you.
So, in this story, you guys are double Eddie Vedder, and I'm Janine Garofalo.
Yes,
yes.
I can do worse. I can do worse. I'll take it.
You've always been Garofalo to us. I'm so excited about this book and all that stuff, but I'm excited about college football season. It's back. Let's talk about the excitement we had. I'm assuming you were at the game. You were at the Big House. So you're in a football stadium.
Almost 110,000 people.
Were they checking vaccination cards? What were they doing?
They were doing nothing on that front.
Zero.
No masks,
zero.
No vaccination cards. Come on in, 110,000 people, and let's see what happens.
So, did you feel safe?
That's what we're doing in Michigan Stadium.
Wow.
Did you not feel safe, or what did you do?
I was in the press box with a mask on, so I was fine. And right. I'm double vaxxed and all that. So,
did they have open food?
Wasn't too worried.
Did they have open food in the press box? Like, what was the vibe in there?
The food they call the press box food, yeah.
Yes.
No, but they're like buffets and stuff.
The issue is not the open part. The issue is that food.
But it's a food. Yeah, so. That's true. But nobody was worried. Was that even a topic of conversation as, you know, people were walking around, or no, they're just happy that it's back?
It might have come up once or twice the entire day in the press box. So
wow.
We were largely oblivious. I doubt it came up in the stadium because I didn't see people leaving late in the fourth quarter, despite being a blowout over a MAC team.
Right.
So at least, you know, emotionally, whatever else, they seem to be beyond it. Now we'll find out how the test results come back.
Next week or two.
Was it a super spreader event or not?
That's
around here in Ann Arbor, the students, you have to be vaccinated at Michigan to attend. So that's probably the biggest source of potential spreading that was basically eliminated.
Right.
So that's one thing. And the rate in Washtenaw County, where Ann Arbor is quite high. Now, of course, people come to Michigan football games from all over the country, so who the hell knows?
But, sure.
My guess is this is probably a largely vaxxed crowd.
Right. Yeah. I mean, if you're gonna have that many people together, if you're gonna go to that, I would say you want to feel you want to be vaxxed walking into that situation. Well, but you go to places like Miami, and you're like, well,
maybe 40% of the people are
Florida
vaxxed.
State. You know,
50% of the people are vaxxed.
Maybe, and even Alabama. You know, like what's gonna happen at those stadiums? Are we gonna see? Do you anticipate that we'll see, oh my God, that game is the reason that like everything spiked in this county?
Look, man, the biker convention in South Dakota spawns it. So I don't doubt for a second that if you're in a certain stadium with a 50% vaccination rate, there's no way it can't spread. And yet, we're on the third variant by now, the X-ray variant or whatever the hell.
Yeah.
It's nuts. So it's got to happen. Look, LSU, we're talking about Baton Rouge. They're requiring vaccination cards to get into LSU Stadium. So
Tiger Stadium. Wow.
When Louisiana is doing it right, that's crazy. Well, so let's start there just briefly, because I think, you know, you've spent a lot of time writing and spent time with Bo Schembechler and kind of the old way of like coaching and the way it was done in the past. So Zach Charbonnet is a classic example of a running back who was really good on Michigan. I mean, his freshman year, he was great. His sophomore year,
he set the record, I think, for most touchdowns for a freshman in
2019. And then
that's right.
2020, he kind of had a bit of an off year, but everybody had a bit of an off year. Whole team. And then, you know, in this day and age where you're like, I got to transfer, he transfers back to his hometown he's like 20 minutes from where he went to high school. And now he's at UCLA. And he is, I would argue, one of the reasons UCLA is now in the top 25.
Top 10.
They're a couple of spots away from USC. There's a chance that for the first time in a long time, they could beat USC this year. And you say to yourself, okay, this is the world that exists. If I'm not getting playing time, I'm going to go to another school. I'm just going to do it. How do you think Bo would have handled, or could he have, that's what I'm saying, could he have handled, you know, because he would, could he have handled coaching today?
Think about, not only did you not have the transfer portal and all that, of course, right, in Bo's time, in the 70s, when he was the winningest coach in college football, you had unlimited scholarships. So Michigan had 125 guys on full rides. That's like, wow, four teams, basically.
Yeah, yeah.
Three or four teams, anyway.
Now it's how many?
The joke of the Big Ten in the 70s. The two best teams in the Big Ten were Michigan or Ohio State. Pick either one. The third and fourth best teams were the backups at those two schools, and fifth was Purdue.
Right. And
they had them all locked up, and you really couldn't leave.
So how many scholarships are there today?
If it was 70s, right?
85.
Okay, that's a huge, huge difference.
Yep.
And as a coach, you know, a lot of guys, certainly John Beilein in the basketball realm, one of the reasons people said he left college was because he got tired of having to recruit his own team. It's almost like
to come back.
It's like getting married to someone and then
being like, stay in this marriage,
having to beg them to stay every year. It's like, God, just can't I relax and just be in this relationship and get fat and sit down and in my sweatpants every
and
once
let myself
in a while?
Go. Yes. Is that asking so much?
Isn't that what marriage is about?
Yes, thank you.
Let yourself
there.
Go.
Look at this. There.
Yeah, I know. But I mean, that's the point.
7 years.
But that's the point that, like, you.
It's worse than that. I mean, you have to re-propose every year.
That's right.
And she has to say yes every year. And you got to put on a damn wedding every year. I mean, these guys.
You kind of do.
Some of the best recruiting being done now is exactly that. Convincing guys to stay one more year versus transfer or jump to the NBA, the NFL, or the NHL in some cases.
Right.
And so you have to re-recruit your team every year out. And those who can do that, get a guy back for a second or third year, those are your top teams now. So now, except for Alabama, they just reload anyway. I mean, could scrape off their starters and still win the damn national title.
That's
They're
right.
Crazy.
That's true.
But that also,
look at Michigan State. Look at Michigan State.
Nationwide.
Look at Michigan
you've
State.
Cade McNamara is the starter.
Yeah.
A redshirt sophomore. Hot shot behind him. J.J. McCartney is right behind him and is, you know.
Five-star.
Probably potentially better.
Yeah.
And if you flip him around and you started J.J. first, well, Cade's in the transfer portal that weekend.
Yeah.
So if you do it this way, you can probably keep both Cade and J.J. doing third, fourth quarter duty and maybe taking the job by mid-season or so. You've got to think differently now as a coach as to whom I'm playing and why. It's not just who's better that day. It's who can I keep in the program the longest?
Or how can I keep both these guys? So we talked about this all the time when Randy and I were I'll make an analogy to joke writing for Cheap Seats. You know, sometimes we would have a great joke and it would be a long joke, but a great joke. And we're like, that's the best possible joke for this situation. But if we do this joke, then we can't do these two other jokes because it'll cover that moment. And so we elect to do a shorter joke that isn't quite necessarily as good in order to get two more other jokes in there.
Because the three of them together are
stronger better than the one.
So that's the thought, and that's the thought process that these guys have to go through. And if the flip side of that is if you're good at pulling in transfers, I'm going to say Mel Tucker at Michigan State, certainly after the first week.
Clearly.
This guy Walker III, who they pulled from Wake Forest, a school that, you know, isn't necessarily top of the barrel when it comes to ACC football. This guy, who was clearly a very good player
for them,
he steps into a system right away, doesn't have to wait a year, and now Michigan State goes from being a team that no one really picked to do much of anything to now, wait a second, if they can run the football with this guy got 265 yards, he's not going to do that every game, but if they can do get 150, 140 yards out of this guy per game, now
who knows?
Who knows?
Well, and you break it down that way, and Mel Tucker, look, the cupboard was bare. People forget this, but D'Antonio had a great run. He set the record at Michigan State for the most wins of any Michigan State coach, and they had Duffy Doherty and Biggie Munn, who had won national titles in the 50s and 60s, won 8 out of 10 versus Michigan. But his last 4 years at Michigan State, he had a losing record in the Big Ten. 4 years. That's a whole cycle. It's a whole class.
Yeah.
So what Mel Tucker took over last year was, you know, bare cupboard, man. Nothing's left, basically. The offense was anemic. So what do you do? And you guys hit the nail on the head. There are now three skills outside of actual coaching. You know, let's talk about that for a second, but forget coaching for a second. Recruiting, and then there's the transfer portal, then there's retention. These are now three separate skills you have as a big-time college coach. Unless you're Nick Saban, Nick does not need anyone else's leftovers, but everyone else does.
Right, and neither does Ohio State, but you're kind of seeing it in basketball too with Maryland. What Maryland did in this offseason, Maryland was like, look, we don't have a point guard and we don't have a center. We just don't. We don't have a point guard and we don't have a center. So what do? They go out in the transfer portal and they get two great guys who like are eager to play, and now they're playing in a big-time program. And you say to yourself, oh, my God, they might have just solved their problem.
And a guy who's in his third year who's proven it on the court in college is, in my opinion, as valuable as like the 15th or 18th guy in the country.
Because, you know why? Because recruits, you look at like a guy like Josh Christopher, who went to Arizona State, who Michigan, some say they whiffed on. They went all in on this kid. You thought you were going to get him, and then you didn't get him. And then it go to Arizona State, and Michigan does way better than Arizona State this year. And so did you really whiff? The guy was good. He was a decent player. Mm-hmm. He had a lot of potential. All he had kind of did was showed his potential so that he could get drafted in the NBA, and he was drafted in the first round. You're like, what are these kids? Are they angling to win a title for their team? And he actually got drafted ahead of Isaiah Livers, who I thought it was a better player this year. But you say to yourself, well, this kid's got potential, so he's gonna, you know, he used that potential card. So people have different goals in that instance.
What happens more and more, though, and you hit the nail on the head here too, is that it's turned, look, the coaches have been mercenaries for a long time. Some exceptions, Lord knows. Guys will stay at the school no matter what and won't entertain offers. But there's a lot of bouncing around, obviously. But now the players have basically the same mobility, essentially. So almost everybody, coach, assistant coach, starters, backups, they're all essentially free agents who can go anywhere at any time. It's now a fluid system. It's a free market. So, and there's a lot of pluses to that, obviously. But one of the weird parts is what you're talking about.
So the funny thing as well is just like, do you think
that was my wife walking through there?
I saw her. She went through the frame. So a funny thing as well is the idea that maybe NIL, you know, in terms of, you know,
name, image, and likeness,
being able to make money off your name at a school, maybe that's a way to keep guys maybe an extra year or something, saying to yourself, you've built something with this fan base here and you can maybe capitalize on it next year. Or
yeah, you go somewhere else, you're going to have to start over. Or you say to a kid, hey, I know you might not be fully happy here, but if you go to this school, you're going to be behind this guy, this guy, this guy, and this guy. And you're not the top dog anymore. So if I were you,
they might be using that to keep guys around. That might be in your retention sort of bag of tricks.
Well, throw in this: if I'm a Chevy dealer or Cadillac dealer in, say, I don't know, Tuscaloosa, Alabama,
right?
Look, I'm paying you to go to Alabama.
That's right.
If you want to transfer to, you know, Auburn, sorry, kid, I'm not paying for that.
No, absolutely.
Now, in some cases, think about this scenario: the guy's not making. It's supposed to be the starter. Now he's the backup. This dealership, I'm making it all up, but
sure,
true.
This happens. This happens.
Bucks,
right.
Whatever. But the coach doesn't want you, but the dealership is keeping you there. Now you got a conflict between the coach and the dealership. That's a sitcom waiting to happen.
Well, no.
I want to transfer to Auburn, but Auburn, you know, can't pay me. This guy pays me, but the Alabama coach is dying for me to go to Auburn, and I'm stuck here. So everyone's happy.
How about the fact that the way Auburn or the way Alabama uses its some of its talent, specifically running backs, they don't run them into the ground so that, number one, they can recruit more five-star running backs and have them come and say, look, we're not going to take all the tread off your tires. You're going to give you the X amount of touches, which, by the way, we know the NFL loves. So the NFL loves that you didn't run for 8,000 yards in college. Like, who cares? Like, there are kids who run that much all the time, but, like, we don't want you to do that because we want to preserve you for the NFL. So now you've got the dealership or whoever is giving money to this kid, and they're like, he should be the face, but he's platooning with two other guys just so they can save him, and that was, like, a recruiting thing. Crazy.
The conflicts coming up are going to be glorious, by the way. And look,
yes,
I am no fan of Mark Emmert and the NCAA running these things because they're horrible.
The worst.
They're horrible people, and they do a horrible job.
Sure.
They're my bronze medalist on the Corruption Sports Hall Olympic medalist.
Let me see if I can guess the other two. FIFA?
Gotta be gold medal.
The IOC. The IOC.
Yes.
There you go.
And FIFA then and the NCAA, a competitive third, though. Competitive third.
Oh, they're all
now, look,
tight.
FIFA's FIFA. They're the Alabama of corrupt.
They've been doing it for a long
so
time. Yeah.
It's very hard to beat FIFA, but they're right up there. So the NCAA is a mess. As much as I hate Mark Emmert running anything, I'm not that wild about the Cadillac dealer in Tuscaloosa running things either.
No, let's not protect that guy.
We're going to get more of that. So it's going to be Wild West, and I don't care anybody, all the experts, and I'm supposed to be one of them, who say, oh,
you are.
That's not gonna, this is going to happen. No one knows what the hell is going to happen.
Nobody.
It's going to be Wild West, and it's going to be unintended consequences. So here goes.
Couldn't agree with you more. I want to move on and talk about how important, certainly in college football, and we know it's true in the NFL too, how important it is to have an elite quarterback or the kind of quarterback that can just win you games, not just a five-star guy. We saw Clemson first week against a very good Georgia defense, but you saw a Clemson team that finally, for the first time in 8 years, did not have the kind of difference maker quarterback that would just go out and win that game. I had to think in the back of my mind, and I'm sure all the Clemson fans out there were saying to themselves, if we had Trevor Lawrence, if we had Deshaun Watson after a massage, we would have the guy who would have delivered us a victory in that game, albeit even if it was a close one. Well, so now they don't have that. They finally, you have a five-star guy.
I mean, look at LSU. They lose to UCLA, and you say to yourself, boy, you got lucky with Joe Burrow, didn't you, Ed Orgeron?
It's true.
And by the way, transfer portal out of Ohio State.
That's right.
So Trevor Lawrence and the beautiful mane of hair, of course, that guy wins that game. There's little question about that.
He does.
Look, in the NFL, what do you have? Five elite signal callers, maybe. In college football, 10?
Yeah.
10 guys can, you know, plausibly win a national title. And by the way, at Ohio State now, they got a player, of course, who is making more money through the NIL, and he's not played it down yet, or until last week, more money through the NIL than any professor on campus. That is my statement.
Right as there. As a teacher at the University of Michigan,
a professor
yourself, that's gotta warm the cackles or cockles of your heart.
Yeah, well, keep in mind, I don't have tenure either, any of this stuff. Still, you know, there are six-figure professors, obviously.
Sure.
I ain't one of them. I'm getting $5,000 or $10,000 a throw.
Right.
So this was that impressed me. And by the way, if you're the president of Ohio State, it's gotta stick a little bit, doesn't it?
Yeah. He's making more this high school kid is making more than
your starting quarterback, you think, is making more than the, you know, chair of engineering, for crying out loud.
Well, it's interesting because not to somewhat tie it into your book because you know a hell of a lot about hockey. I think, you know, basketball and football are different, and baseball is a different animal too, but basketball and football are different in that. Let's look at the teams that have done well in the NCAA tournament. Usually have great guard play. You know, you look at Gonzaga, they were great. Their big men were awesome, but it was Suggs last year. It was Jalen Suggs. It was like, you know, you look at the teams that particularly do well, they have a great point guard, a great guard that kind of runs your team. In college football, it's a quarterback. I don't know, maybe if you have a goalie that stands on his head, fine. But a lot of times goalies are like the quietest dudes on a team. They're not really the leaders. They're crazy.
Yeah.
Like a goalie is kind of like a mixture between
a wide receiver
and a kicker. You know what I mean? It's like they do these, like, they all do their drills off on their own.
Leave them alone, man. No, they're like a relief pitcher and a kicker.
That's it. A closer.
Don't mess with these guys.
Just don't mess with
whatever
them.
Whatever your routine is, don't talk to them. Don't mess with them.
Don't
get
touch
a goalie
them.
Coach so they can talk to each other about whatever they talk about.
Exactly. So it's less, whereas the point guard is in everybody's face. You think of the great point guards as like literally moving things around. Chris Paul, look at what he did with Phoenix.
Awesome.
That was the one piece you needed, or wherever he goes, what he does, he made that a championship level team. So it's interesting that, like, and we just know this, if you've got a quarterback that can do something, and I think that's why Michigan fans were so excited when they saw J.J. McCarthy just make that spectacular cross-the-field throw, and you say to yourself, I might not be ready right now.
But when's the last time we saw somebody as a Michigan fan throw somebody open?
That's just such a kind
quarterback, yeah. Like I'm going to throw a quarterback.
I'm thrown to a space. If you get there, you're gone.
Well,
right?
I see you running, and I know exactly where that's going to go. It's incredible poise for a freshman to come in. Now, he played at IMG, which a lot of these football factory high schools are playing. You're playing talent that's
IMG, Bishop Sycamore, all these schools.
Wonderful schools.
We'll get into that later.
I've said this a long time on your show, and I want credit for this one. I called this one 5-10 years ago, I think, before you even had a show.
Yeah.
Got to keep your eye on Bishop Sycamore.
That's right.
I've always told you guys,
they're
the sleepers.
You knew. We'll talk about them later.
They're still asleep, but I would say the idea that, like, okay, that quarterback could be the game changer. And so you look at Ohio State and you say to yourself, all right, C.J. Stroud, great quarterback, kid's tall, and he's got, like, he can throw the ball really well. But you're like, does he have, like, Justin Fields, when you watch Justin Fields play in the preseason, it's just preseason, but you watch some of the plays he made for the Bears, and I understand why Bears fans have hope. Like, they have hope that this guy is their guy. Like, here we go. This is, you know, get ready because this is the future of our team. I don't necessarily know if Ohio State doesn't have that quarterback, they're not as dominant because they've literally had an unbelievable run, too, of the best quarterbacks that you've had since, I can't even remember.
Since Troy Smith.
Wow.
When you think about it.
Surprisingly, Michigan under Harbaugh, they really have not had that guy.
Well,
that's one thing that everyone thought Harbaugh was going to bring. Andrew Luck at Stanford, of course, turned Kaepernick into a big-time play caller for a while with the 49ers. Everyone thought that was going to happen at Michigan. It really hasn't yet. But these two guys, certainly J.J., McCarthy. I think I called him McCartney earlier. Whoops.
McCarthy,
sorry.
Yeah.
I had Darren in my mind, but there you go.
He's
got real potential. And look, the Ravens, 10 years ago or so, they won a Super Bowl without a serious quarterback.
Yeah.
That almost never happens.
Happened twice, in my opinion. They did. So Brad Johnson with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
Oh, yeah. That's right.
And Trent Dilfer. Those two are the last in recent memory.
I mean,
that
you
I
could
remember.
Argue maybe the Giants with Eli Manning, although Eli Manning
People
stepped
say Eli,
up.
Is Eli Manning a Hall of Famer? I mean, he's won twice. Is he?
That will not do it. You need a stack of numbers for a 10-year career, I think.
I think he did, but was he the most feared quarterback for the – no, because he took a 9-7 team to the Super
right.
Bowl.
Right, and then they alternated every other year, right? They're 9-7 and then
– yeah, and then they were terrible.
Yeah.
Crazy
so,
stuff.
Yeah, so it is that. So, I mean, the Baseball Hall of Fame, just the inductions happened yesterday. I don't know if you watched those, but it was interesting because I feel like a guy like Ted Simmons, the guy we grew up watching as St. Louis Cardinals fans, very divisive. So you had Ted Simmons who, like, couldn't be more on the line. I'd say – most people who didn't watch him, and it was so regional back then, baseball was, that, like, most people don't know who he is. Most people are like,
I don't know, Ted
Simmons.
I bet
New Yorkers are like, who the hell is this guy? Like, Derek Jeter. Derek Jeter is, like, unanimous minus one. And I'd love to find the
guy. Who's that guy?
That asshole who wouldn't.
Or woman.
Right?
Can we say that on your show? Because
yes.
I'll double down on what you just said.
Right?
Absolutely.
Who doesn't vote for Derek Jeter?
Douchebag.
You got to go out of your way to be a jackass to think this guy's not got the numbers.
It's a
everything.
Boston.
The
it's a Boston.
The titles. What measure do you want? The all star. You see that? And I saw his diamond of dating. By the way,
yes.
They had fantastic. I mean, Mariah Carey.
I mean,
I didn't realize Scarlett Johansson.
Jessica Biel.
At one point was
Jessica Biel, I believe.
Yeah.
Was he ScarJo at one point?
That alone. Derek Jeter's got it all. Who could possibly vote against that guy? Crazy.
I mean, and I don't know if you've met him, but I met him at the signing of the stars thing at Michigan, and he was like. Immediately, he was the nicest, best dude ever. You kind of
do you know my story with Derek Jeter?
Look into his eyes. Yeah, here's a great
my
story.
My Derek Jeter story is it was so this is like the Brady Hoke years, and Michigan was playing. I forgot who they were playing. Maybe it was even Michigan State. And my son was like 4, and he had just had a soccer game, and I wanted to go watch a Michigan State game, and so I go to this little sports bar kind of restaurant called Goal on 3rd Street.
Get it?
Go in, right? I get in. We sit at a booth, and next to us is a booth of like young dudes. They look like just a bunch of young dudes. And one of them had this gold chain around his neck, like that was like glistening in the sun. I'm like, who's this dude?
Who's racking that much ice at a
sports bar on 3rd Street in the middle of the day? And someone comes out from the kitchen and asks to take their picture with this dude. And I start looking at this guy, and I'm like, no way, that's Derek Jeter. So I take my son over, and I say, and I didn't want to bother him because people were bothering him. So, but I just was like, hey, I don't want to bother you, but, you know.
But I'm bothering you.
But, exactly. I said, my son wanted to meet the greatest shortstop to ever play the game. Ozzie Smith is not here, so I'm going to introduce him to you.
He laughed at that.
He laughed. Totally laughed. And that's, he's like, and he recognized me from Cheap Seats and maybe Michigan and all that world stuff. And he's like, come on, oh man, stop. And we were joking around. And then he started talking to my son. Of course, my son, like a 4-year-old, just clammed up and didn't say anything. I'm like, Derek freaking Jeter. And and I got a great picture with him and him.
It just is, you know. So I mean, it's interesting. But like, you think about Hall of Fame players. Like, what does that mean to have that sort of a career? What does it mean, like, to be, you know, when Ichiro goes? Ichiro's definitely going to be a Hall of Famer. He's definitely.
Did he get 3,000 hits?
Yeah,
in the major leagues.
I think he did.
Yeah. And then he had over 4,000, right?
So what about a guy like Adam Wainwright? So in a time when things shift, he could have 200 wins.
Is he close? What's he at?
He's close. I mean, if he pitches for another couple of years, he could have 200 wins. I was listening to Pedro Martinez talk about him, and he's like, this guy's he's in the Hall of Fame conversation. It's so interesting as stats change and how players get used. It's interesting. Yeah. I don't know why our discussion went all the way over there, but, you know.
Well, taking up the old stats and the new stats, that's part of the problem. Geography in the old days, there's no ESPN.
Right.
There's a game of the week, but St. Louis Cardinals can't be on that every week, of course.
No.
So that's a limiting factor. Miguel Cabrera for the Detroit Tigers. He won the Triple Crown a few years ago.
Yeah.
There's some debate as to whether or not he'd be the MVP based on the new Sabre metrics and blah, blah. Are you kidding me? Triple Crown.
The mic. Yeah, nobody who. So that's happened a lot, hasn't it?
I'm just going to say this about Adam Wainwright. Adam Wainwright had a 19-8 year, a 20-11 year, a 19-9 year, and a 20-9 year. And right now, in 2021, in his like 16th year, he's 15-7.
That's unreal.
That's crazy. What it usually boils down to in most of the Hall of Fames is sustained excellence.
That's right.
When I was discussing Alan Trammell, who got in a few years ago late, with some sports writers who vote on it, they say the problem is you can't point to a 2 or 3 year period where he was the best short year. Robin Yount, of course, Ozzy, your man.
Sure.
He had a hard time breaking out from that pack. And that's, you know, a question there. He eventually got there, obviously, but Bill Freehan, who just passed away a few years ago, a compatriot of Ted Sizemore's, of course.
Ted Simmons. Yeah,
he was
Simmons.
An all-star guy in like 8 straight years, all-star catcher. And he didn't get all that close to the Hall of Fame because the numbers just aren't high enough.
Right.
I think there's one catcher from the 70s before Ted who got it, Johnny Bench.
Johnny Bench and Carlton Fisk. Those are the two.
If you play catcher, you're not going to get there. That's kind of the sad fact.
Yeah. Your knees get busted up and, you know.
And you're batting 270, 260.
Which, by the way, in today's league would be, you'd almost lead the league. Isn't that crazy how that's gone? Like, we don't care. Like, Joey Gallo's hitting 170, and you're like, nah, he hit 35 home runs.
Hitting home runs. Good for him.
That's right.
Because that's how he makes the money.
Dave Kong Kingman.
Oh, my God, I remember
Steve
him.
Balboni. Steve same Balboni. Same guy, essentially.
Yeah, essentially. All right, before we take a quick break, I want to, and we get into some quick hits and talk about your book, I want to get your week one in the college football season is down. And yet it feels like we maybe know less about these teams than we did before.
So does if Clemson runs the table?
We got dumber somehow. How, like, in the week of games.
So I say this because let's just focus on the Big Ten. Like, do you really know how Indiana's going to be? I mean, they're still great, but like, they got whooped by Iowa. But who doesn't go to Kinnick and get whooped? But like, is it that Iowa's so good? We don't know. Is it that Indiana's so bad? Washington, who comes in and plays Michigan in a
lost to Montana.
Lost to an FCS. This was their App State game. Okay, this is it. You lost to an FCS team.
At home.
And
your ranked team, I think they're 20th going into that game.
Yeah, so 18th in some polls. So you say to yourself,
that a fluke?
Who are we going to see? Is Washington going to come into this game really mad, and is Michigan going to do what they did last year?
Against Michigan State. Exactly. Lay an egg after a good win.
So, like, we don't know. Who's Penn State and who's Wisconsin? Wisconsin made mistakes, too. They lost at home. It's like, we don't know.
Is Penn State and Wisconsin just Spider-Man, the two Spider-Mans pointing at each other? Like, I'm you, you're me? Like, is that that? And so is Clemson, if Clemson runs the table, do they get a playoff spot? because they lost.
The answer is yes, based on lifetime achievement.
Yeah. You think so?
But that Georgia game opened my eyes.
Sure.
And I mean, I was not expecting Georgia to, I thought it'd be a good game, but like everyone else, I probably had, you know, Clemson winning, but Trevor Lawrence, man, like you said, I mean, point guard, quarterback, and goalie. And baseball is not the equivalent because a pitcher goes every 3 or 4 days, obviously.
That's right. That's
so
right.
It's three, find me a title team without a great one of those. It almost never happens.
I mean, in hockey,
Clemson,
more
man, they're Trevor, they still have a damn good team, clearly.
Sure. Absolutely.
But they're Trevor Lawrence away from beating teams like Georgia. So, they're playing the ACC. They're not playing anybody again until they're back in the Final Four.
That's right. That's right.
That's what you're going to see.
Especially because the vaunted North Carolina loss.
People talked about North Carolina being in there, and they lost. I mean,
They lost a bad one.
That, to me, that's exciting. To me, seeing Florida State push Notre Dame to the limit and possibly had a chance to beat them but couldn't do it, I'm like, this is why you like college football. This is why college football at times, like I say, we know less in week two than we did in week one, and we knew nothing.
This is why I love college football. The NFL is designed for everyone's going to be 9-7 or 7-9, except for a few outliers.
Yeah.
The Lions, of course, being that outlier always.
Sure, on the wrong side.
9-7, 7-9. Man, on a given year, you know, the Falcons beat the Cowboys. Is that an upset or not? I got to look it up.
Who knows?
But, man, when Montana beats Washington, I ain't got to look that up.
Earth-shattering.
When Appalachian State beats Michigan. It's not even a state. I looked that up, too, by the way. It's not a state.
No, it's not. It's an area. Region.
That one just sounds bad, doesn't it? Appalachian State. It's like, oh, man. You don't have to look up. You know right away that's a shocker. And that's why I love college football. There tends to be some stability at the top.
And who are we talking to at the Shutdown Fullcast? Those guys. That's a great podcast about college sports. And
Spencer Hall
wrote a great article about how when teams aren't expected to win and they pull off the upset, that win can carry a school and a program for decades. And I guarantee you that Montana win can carry that team. I think the Michigan win still is carrying Appalachian State. I think they still use it for recruiting. I think there are people, fans, who talk about it still 15 years later. And I think the same thing, you know, can happen for schools that are down. Schools like, you look at a team like Michigan, if Michigan can surprise people, can upset a team or two, can beat Ohio State at home with a kid who's a freshman who may be amazing but may make one mistake when they don't really make mistakes. I look back at those games in the 90s where Michigan would beat Ohio State teams that had better talent, and usually those games hinged on a mistake made by an Ohio State quarterback. We haven't seen that in a really long time. Same thing with Alabama. You know, everyone's crowning Alabama again, but this kid is it Bryce Love?
Bryce Young.
He's a freshman. He's going to make a dumb mistake, and it might be against Georgia in the finals. It might be against Florida. He might make a mistake against LSU. We don't know. And that's, to me, what's, for the first time in 4 or 5 years, after all these big names have been dominating college football, that's why this year might be the most exciting year we've had in a long time.
It could be the weirdest year because predictions don't count for a damn thing this year.
That's right.
That's very clear. And I think that's going to continue.
Yeah.
Alabama's going to be good. That's not a shocker. But I can see them losing to somebody along the way.
Maybe.
It's not because they should, because it's going to be a weird year.
That's right.
That's kind of cool.
And I love that. All right, and that's a great way to take a break. We'll take a quick break. When we come back, quick hits. Can't wait to talk about that and talk about Let Them Lead, which is an amazing book that John Eubacon has written. And everybody should pick it up, especially if you run a business. We'll tell you why after this break.
Hey guys, welcome back to the show. We want to remind a few people, all of you people,
that we have a Patreon where we're doing new episodes of our show, Cheap Seats. We are doing them ourselves. We are finding the footage. I'm so excited. We're about to release, or is it going to release? It releases today.
Today is
today
out.
Today it's out on our Patreon, a Battle of the Network Stars. We always wanted to do it, couldn't get the rights. It is insane. Okay?
Cosell, that clip of Cosell being creepy with Morgan Fairchild, it's backed up in this episode.
Just some of the things he crosses.
Am I still on, by the way?
Yes, you're on.
I want some of that. Absolutely.
It's insane.
Lola Flana. I recall Saturday Night Live made fun of that as the network battle of the T's and A's.
Yes.
The swimming sprint had nothing to do with swimming at all.
No.
It's Tanya Carter.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
Getting ready to start. Teeing up this one all day long.
So fun and so good. So we did that, and we've got other episodes coming up in the future. We're just so excited to do that. So you got to join the Patreon. It's $5 a month. It's super easy. You get extra content. We're going to do a little extra quick hit with John U. Bacon, who's our guest today. And so, like, you get that, plus a weekly podcast that's for video stuff. Again, Patreon.
Just for you only.
Patreon.com/Sklar Brothers. Join it and watch it.
We should have a few thousand people on this thing.
I agree.
It's just new. It started, but the only place to get new episodes of Cheap Seats is on our Patreon.
It's a wonderful thing to
so
do.
So that's that. Check our dates for live dates. But let's
now
let's
talk
this
about
book.
This great book that John U. Bacon has written. By the way, as comedians who put out new albums every couple of years, it is so hard to
write a new book almost every year or two.
The dude is so prolific. The book is Let Them Lead. It's a story of when you took over the Huron River Rats. Am I right?
That is correct. The real name, swear to God.
The local, yeah, the River Rats.
The losingest high school hockey team in American history or in Michigan state history?
In the United States that year. 0-22-3 is hard to beat.
Yeah, and you took it over and you taught these kids how to
teach themselves.
Really teach themselves. It's the old Japanese adage of, you know, give a kid a fish and he has dinner, and teach a kid how to fish and he can basically eat for
work
the rest
at Long
of his
John
life.
Silver's.
He can work at Long John Silver's.
Confucius, I think.
Yeah, it was Confucius, or it was
confused man outside.
I think it was
of
Arthur
Tre.
It was Arthur Treacher.
Oh, yeah. Those guys.
I know, but it's
who can keep those guys straight?
Uh-huh. It's a wonderful book, and you know, I think what's amazing is how much you learned and how much people learn when they give up the reins a little bit. It's so interesting. I feel like Jim Harbaugh is doing that right now. Mm-hmm. With his coaching and his coaching staff, even though he's digging in too, but he's at some point you have to know what you don't know and let kids kind of take over.
If life, Randy, has taught me nothing else, it's what I don't know. So I started there. As my dad said, the title of the first chapter, when you're on the floor, you can't fall out of bed. What you pleasantly left out is the fact that I still hold the record at Huron High School for the most games in a Huron uniform, 86, three straight years on the varsity with the fewest goals. Zero. So
okay.
A coach with zero goals and a team with zero wins. Yes. There's the combination that portends success.
Well, but you could tell those guys, hey, I've been where you are and I've been where you guys have been. And so, like, you know, I'm not telling you as a guy who doesn't relate to you. I'm telling you as a guy who didn't score a goal in 86 games when I was here, but there were lessons I learned and you figure it out. I just love that. This isn't a story that happened to some coach in Michigan that you don't know. This is
your story.
Story.
For the first time, you turned sort of the lens onto yourself.
How was that?
A little weird at first. As my first of 12 books, it's the first one and maybe the last one in the first person, autobiographical. And of course, I'm writing about people who was then 16, 17, 15, whatever, who are now 35, 36. So I had to be careful there, of course, in some fronts.
Sure.
But the way to tell the story I didn't realize came from Rick Wolf, my editor on Bo's Lasting Lessons, and also
amazing.
Jack Welch's From the Gut and a bunch of other New York Times bestsellers. He said, it's a leadership book. It's not a memoir. It's not just, you know, what happened to everybody, because I couldn't, you know, get into their privacy and so on as their former coach, unlike Friday Night Lights, where he's just a reporter.
Right.
So that was the way to frame it, and that worked out quite well. And the cool part is, because they're older, they sent me 150 pages of memories and stories and scenes.
The best.
Half of which I didn't know. Incredibly. So, and that's all baked into the book. So you get to hear from the people who are being led, not just the leader, saying, you know, hey, I did all this smart stuff. No, I made a ton of mistakes and my players will tell you about them. Well, and they were great. So it adds a depth to it, I think, that most leadership books do not have.
And a huge, you know, this is huge in their lives. Isn't it exciting for you that like 15 years later, the impact of what they were able to what you guys were able to do there and turn it around the way you guys did.
He's still staying with these guys.
Yeah, these lessons actually go in. I bet they use that in their lives with their own kids, with their own
work. With their work,
They actually do. Of the 54 players, about like 45 are now leaders of something, which is a very high percentage, it seems like. And they come back in my backyard every summer for our barbecues, and I go to their weddings. I went to Bobby Shahidapur's on Friday.
Awesome.
And they'll be there tonight. I'm speaking at the Michigan Theater. It doesn't involve you.
I know.
But a lot of those guys will be there tonight. We'll get a beer afterwards. They're old enough now, it turns out.
I love it.
So this book is a great book. I'm just going to say, if you are hiking, if you're walking, you can get this book on Audible and listen to it. Did you read it?
I did. That's the bad
news. Bacon read the book. The guy who wrote the book reads the book. It's his life. I encourage my wife to read her book. She was like, I'm going to let someone else read it. I'm like, nah, no, this is your life.
Your words.
This is your memoir. And so Bacon reads the book. It's a great way, if you're like, I just don't have the time to read, or I just don't have the energy right now, listen to it while you take a hike, while you walk the dogs, while you do that stuff.
It's truly
wonderful. You listen to our podcast. Is a great person to support because he is doing brilliant work.
If you own
work.
A company and you're leading people, it's kind of got some of
you
the
You want
best
some tricks? Lessons. You want some things? You want some ways to
this,
sort of...
This is going
to
launch you on a corporate like speaking tour to speak to... I guarantee you're going to be speaking to tons of companies using this as the guidelines.
Well, you're very kind. Let's hope that's true, I guess. But Dan Shaughnessy of the Boston Globe just said over the weekend, this book is Ted Lasso meets the Mighty Ducks.
That's awesome. So,
hey.
And
take
Ted Lasso is the underqualified coach. Yes,
I know, but still, it got them to do the.
There's
things.
A reason why Ted Lasso is so successful, and I'm going to apply it to this book as well. It's that there is a desire right now in the darkness of our times for positivity
and hope,
and this story, this narrative of coming the phoenix out of the ashes, because that's what we need to be as a country right now. That's what we need to do as a world right now. And this book, let this be the tip of the spear and lead you there.
Let them lead unexpected lessons in leadership from America's worst high school hockey team. It's great, John Eubanks. All right, let's jump into some quick hits.
Let's do it. All right.
Before I leave that real quickly, Let Them Lead by Bacon.com. is the website for the book. You can order it on there through Amazon or your local store. Let Them Lead by Bacon.com. And yes, I have a podcast now too on leadership. Woo. Talk to Jim Hackett, Carol nice. Hutchins, the softball coach, a bunch of other great leaders. And by the way, you guys would actually be great on this.
Well, let's do it. We'll do it.
All about it. Let's do it.
You've seen enough things, what works, what doesn't out there in the world, including your kids, by the way, but also you guys are entrepreneurs. You're running your own business.
Yeah.
And how many clubs you've been in? You've seen them run well and run poorly. And there's a big difference.
Amen. 100%.
So, anyway,
amen.
We'll talk about that another time.
I cannot wait. We're going to do it. All right, let's give
quick
this
hits.
Some quick hits. Someone picked up Bryson's ball on the tour championship. I don't know if you heard about that.
I mean, are you surprised? Obviously.
By the way, that could have been done by a number of dudes. Like Brooks could have done it. Cantlay could have done
it. He's
not
too popular, right?
Patrick Reed kicked it. Patrick Reed could have done it just because he's an asshole and no one likes him.
Say, he's not very popular either, but hey.
No.
At least, like Patrick Reed is like, at least I'm not Brooks Koepka.
So, you know what I mean? Yeah. So
he's like, I don't have to be Brooks Koepka, and I don't have to work out as hard as that guy does.
Meanwhile, though,
or at all.
So Bryson is like not getting vaccinated. He's outspoken about this thing and that. He's what a douchebag, and it's making Brooks Koepka look better. But all these guys are on the damn Ryder Cup team.
Yeah,
that someone's got to lead that whole thing. Who the hell's that?
That is
be?
Going to be a dysfunctional
dicey.
Family.
And this is why, by the way, the Europeans win almost every time. With
that's right.
Significantly less talent.
Better team. They're a better team.
It sounds
speaking
crazy
of your
in
book.
Golf, of all the damn thing, you're not passing the ball around.
Let
but
them
it matters.
Lead.
And you see Ola Thabo back in the old days, those guys in the green with the Ole song and so on. They're having a good time with each other.
Yep.
They're knocking back their sangria in the free time, and it works. And Tiger Woods and Mickelson did not get along.
Nope, they
hated
together
each anyway.
Other.
This is a few years ago, of course.
Yep.
And it does two best players around, and it doesn't work. So even in golf, talent alone cannot get you there. That's
you
kind
need
of incredible.
The teamwork.
Amen.
That's awesome.
Amen. Let's move on. Clinton Portis and 15 other players pled guilty to fraud for filing false medical claims to the NFL Player Fund. I don't know if you saw this. This is a story that's been
kicked around.
It's been developing over time, but they've pled guilty now. You know, they said essentially, let's say that we got this medical machine. And by the way, the amounts of money that these guys defrauded are, yes, there are significant amounts of money, $115,000, $150,000, $45,000. Not life-changing money. It's not, I mean, you think, so there's two sides to this coin. Is it just a statement about how poorly the NFL takes care of its players after they put them through the physical ringer? Is it a story about that? Is it a story about guys who mismanaged millions of dollars of their thing? I think it's a little bit of all those things.
I think the answer is yes.
The answer is yes.
Is it all what?
And throw one more on top of that. The NFL, while trying to do the right thing, almost always does it very poorly. You recall the CTE claims now. And they already had a baseline, apparently, that had African Americans lower on Native intelligence than whites. So, yeah. So
they're gonna screw it up.
Not too long ago, they're trying to do the right thing, and they bungle it every time. In this case, they would have been very easy with better communication, I think, to say through the NFLPA, say through agents, and like, don't play any games with this stuff because we are going through this stuff and we're going to catch us. Don't play any games. That would have been smart because right now everyone looks stupid.
So what if Roger Goodell said, look, I make $44 million a year. I'm going to give $10 million of my salary. That means I only make $34 million next year. I'm going to put up $10 million of my salary. And he publicly says that. And makes and forces the owners to do the same. If it's 10 or if it's 5 from each of the owners, I'll be the leader. Every team offers $5 million. And this money
becomes
a fund that goes towards older players and their health care. And this takes care of older players as a slush fund that older players can do that. So it's coming from the owner. Like, you have many times a publicity problem. Look at the way Aaron Rodgers just played. You think that the Packers played him? He played them in those press conferences, saying like they're treating these players like this, and they don't care about this. This is a chance for the owners to step out and say, we're going to spend a little bit of money, and it's going to hurt a little bit, quote unquote. But
it's going to be
maybe I don't get $250 million this year. I get $245. Who cares? You know what I mean? Like, why aren't they doing this?
Because they're selfish and stupid. Yeah. Your answer.
Period.
So I'm sorry. And that's Mark Embert making his $3.5-4 million for a hair guy at the NCAA and all this other crazy stuff. Goodell could do that, by the way. And don't forget, 5 years ago or so, the NFL was still a nonprofit legally, paying a guy $40 million to run it somehow. But, I mean, 10 years of that, $40 million, he's got $400 million plus investments and probably a billionaire. He wouldn't even feel it.
Nope.
But that gesture would resonate for years.
Right.
And
imagine
like
if
say,
every year.
Gesture. The owners, look, they're already billionaires anyway, or else you don't own an NFL team.
That's right.
Except for the Packers, obviously.
Right.
So they wouldn't feel it either. It'd be a great gesture and go a long way towards the PR battle. They are losing on a weekly basis.
Great.
So it would have been smart. It would have been also self-interested. But it's the right thing to do anyway, and they can't do it.
It's 100% the right thing to do, especially given how violent the sport has become. All right, finally, speaking of stupid, the Bishop Sycamore story, which we mentioned before, it keeps getting juicier. So now it's not even a school. Like, someone leaked in an interview that, like, oh, yeah, we don't have a curriculum. We don't do anything. We don't offer this. We're not really a school. What the hell is this thing? Like, what do you know of this thing?
It's a traveling roadshow, I think.
Yeah,
basically.
Essentially.
I mean, it's you know, the old barnstorming baseball leagues.
Yeah.
It's kind of like that. A barnstorming high school team.
And not even good.
On it, I think.
And not even good. Right.
The dorm is a hotel room, I believe.
Right. Yes.
That's all hilarious. The funnier part is ESPN.
Got
honestly,
duped.
You don't have a phone. You don't have a computer. You can't figure this out in about a half an hour. That they got taken on this, that's kind of the big charade to me. The great imposter, what was his name? He managed to get on the court as an NBA ref, NHL ref, and so on. He'd always find himself in places he's not supposed to be.
Right.
A whole team just this. And it worked. They got their paycheck. So
it's amazing.
It's hilarious. And whoever does vetting at ESPN, that
gone.
Better be beefed up because that was pathetic.
They're out of there.
All right, there you go. That is Quick Hits. That's John Eubakin. When we come back, a very special interview with Steven Seagal. Let Them Lead is the book, Unexpected Lessons in Leadership from America's Worst High School Hockey Team. John Eubakin is the author. Thanks for joining us today, buddy. Love having you on.
Always a pleasure. Barry Richter, former captain of Wisconsin Hockey, is your biggest fan. So, Barry, that one's for you.
I love it. We'll be right back. Hey guys, welcome back to the show. As promised, we got him in studio, which is amazing. I don't know how he got here, but
Were you there? How are you?
Steven Seagal.
Konnichiwa.
Hi,
how are
Steven.
You, sir?
I got here via the bus.
Oh, the is that a metaphor? Or? Like, is that like Totoro, the cat bus?
I snuck on.
You snuck on? Oh, you didn't even pay for the bus.
The backside door.
Oh, okay. So when someone was getting off in the front, you slid in the
backside door.
Also, my career.
Slid in the backside door. That's a great
Somebody
way to just
got out. Well, every time a bus door opens, Steven Seagal enters.
Crawls in the back.
Once Steven Seagal enters, no one pays. That's kind of the way it goes.
So people might say, well, why are you having Steven Seagal on your sports podcast? There's not a lot
of
Steven.
You're on my kimono.
On his kimono. Get your chair off one of his two kimonos that he's wearing.
So people say, why do you have Steven Seagal on?
Why would you not?
Well, some people might argue that it's a weird thing.
People say that on the bus, too.
Oh, why would you have Steven Seagal on the bus? Well,
so we read
that
cursorily, and I go,
Okay. Yeah, you like to quiet everything.
So we read that you were having an issue with the SEC, and Randy and I were thinking that's weird that you have an issue with the Southeastern Conference.
Why would
is
they?
Is that who it is?
Yeah,
college football. That's like Alabama and LSU.
Well, what I don't even know.
What is the problem?
What is your issue with
the first problem? I have no way of getting my mail.
Oh, okay.
Because I don't have an address.
You just have an address.
I have I have a place in Arizona.
Right.
It's hard to get there.
Yeah. Well, you put a bunch of boulders so that no one can, not even you can access.
Not even the, yeah.
But
the
if I can get
homeowners.
To the Arizona border, legally I can commandeer a civilian
no,
vehicle.
No, you cannot. You cannot steal a vehicle.
But that
doesn't.
No.
Stealing.
Commandeering and stealing are very close brothers if you're doing it the way you're saying.
Hang on a second. Because now I'm feeling like this.
We're brothers?
Commandeering and no, yes,
we are brothers, but that's
commandeering and stealing are very close.
Can I ask you guys a question?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
If you stand under tree trimming and a
branch
falls on you, can you sue for that?
No, you can't.
No, you can't.
Because you know that the tree is being trimmed. And
if you're ignoring the fact
you decide
that
to put yourself in harm's way. Now, if someone starts trimming a tree without you knowing about it, if let's say you fell asleep under a tree because you have no house.
What if you slip on a grape at a grocery store? can you sue for that?
Maybe. It depends if the grapes were just, you know, very haphazardly.
If I drop the grape,
No, you cannot.
It has to be somebody
else. Somebody worked for the restaurant just flippantly left a grape at the...
Okay. Let's get to the SEC. So the SEC
I'm
is coming
starting
down
to think
on
it's
you.
Less of the SEC.
And that's more of the Security and Exchange Commission.
Either one, I'm in the dark.
What do you owe? You owe a lot of money.
According to them,
yeah.
It depends on what currency you believe
Cryptocurrency.
No, they say I owe $330,000.
Of what? Mm. Of crypto? Of real money?
What's real money?
That's a great question. What is real
Isn't
money?
Isn't money just a representation of like
do you guys
precious
care about,
metals?
Do you guys care about...
yes.
Lire?
What?
I don't know what that
lire.
Is.
Lire.
Lira?
Lira?
Turkish
lira?
I've only seen it. I've never heard
of
it. Do you care about that?
Sure.
No, it means something to you?
A little bit. It's money.
I'm saying the money only matters what you respect.
Money is like just a weird thing because it's just paper.
Right. Like if you choke on a bone at a KFC.
Nope, you cannot sue them. No.
Why?
Because you maybe ate it wrong. You ate the bone incorrect.
You think you can
incorrect.
Sue somebody for about $330,000?
No. So now you're trying to make up the money they're saying you owe.
I'm asking rhetorical questions. And no.
Shouldn't you be in Russia right now? How did you get back in this country? I heard you fleed. You flew? Flew?
Flees.
Flow?
I've never flown.
You never flewed?
Fleed?
Fled. Fled.
It's fled.
You sure?
No. Yes, it is.
I've never fled anything in my life.
Okay.
I don't flee the universe.
Fleed?
I don't flee my inner chi.
Fleed?
Fled.
No, I never have.
Okay. So I thought he should be in Russia right now. Do you think, let me ask you this. Let me ask you a more sports related topic.
Okay.
We just came off the Olympics. Do you think that your style of, I want to call it correctly, karate.
Slow-mo karate.
Slow-mo karate demonstrations where people fall.
Slow-mo karate.
Should that be in the Olympics? Now that we've got so many other things in the Olympics, walking is in the Olympics.
Can that be
in the Olympics? Is that
real? Yeah,
speed walking.
Oh, my God. I've been training for years.
You're a speed walking champion.
Well, he's just been walking because he doesn't have a car.
No, you're just walking because you don't have a car. I understand.
What if someone doesn't rake their lawn?
And then
you trip over their
no,
garden.
That's not you're not gonna
because you can't be on their lawn.
No, yeah, that's their
that's
property.
That's trespassing.
Trespassing.
But they're the reason you hurt your ankle.
Yeah,
because
you were
on,
but
you
walked
up onto their lawn. You
seeing it was slippery.
I would say to them, look, who cares whose lawn it is?
Yeah, it's their lawn.
$330,000.
They're not gonna
forget
do it.
About
they're
this.
Not gonna do it.
I think SMK is. A type of inner energy.
This is your type of karate, slow motion karate.
Yeah. It's SMK. A type of inner energy.
Sure.
Where you conserve as much energy as you can because let's be honest,
you don't want to burn it.
No one knows when they're going to eat their next meal.
That's right. So he's conserving his energy.
Most people know when they're going to eat their next meal.
Not everybody.
You might not.
You don't know, but most people do.
The rest of us plan out 3 meals a
day.
It's okay.
I love the man.
Yeah.
And I am not here to say anything negative about him.
Here we go.
But do you know how much it hurt my career when DMX died?
A lot. A lot.
3 more we were going to
stop, drop.
DMX died and SMK took the hit. Damn That's it. What you're trying to say.
So SMK,
motion karate.
I think that if every country wanted to participate, I obviously would be happy to train every country. Ballpark it at like $330,000.
Why did I think that was the amount of money that would?
It's a round number.
So if we got all the countries to train with you, you would charge $330
flat
on
rate.
The
whole, everybody.
Everybody, like,
and you would tell them
for that, the first Olympiacs.
And because you're such a generous person, they wouldn't even need to send that money to you. They could send it directly
straight to the SEC,
security
and right?
Exchange
it's committee.
Commission.
I mean, I would prefer they send it to me in case. Sure.
I don't think you can be trusted with it. I really don't.
You're down $330,000.
According to?
To the SEC.
I don't even know who that is.
Okay. All right. Thank
what
you
is
for
that, Slow Energy Commission.
I feel like he's going to hit us up for $330,000 if we don't stop this interview.
No, Steven Seagal, thank you. You are going the way I'm going.
No, we're not. Where are you heading?
And also,
which way are you heading?
I do not hit.
No. Which
I
way?
Push.
That's right.
Push. There's no such thing as a hit.
It's just a
hit stops. A push goes.
Continues. Okay. Yeah.
Okay.
Hit stops and a push goes. Remember that, Jay.
All right. Steven Seagal, thank you for
$330,000 worth of advice, Jay.
There you go.
How severe would you consider a paper cut?
Kind of severe, but I don't think you couldn't sue for $330,000.
All right. That's our show.
Konnichiwa. Thank you, Steven Seagal. Good luck getting where you're going, and I'm assuming that's fleeing to Russia. And we thank you, John Bacon, for your insights, and I can't wait for all of you guys to check out his book. Get on the Patreon, and we'll see you guys next week.
Punch Waterfall.
Star Burns Avenue, a podcast network.